Good afternoon, and welcome to Singing and Other Sins, a production of Hawaii Public Radio, funded by the Bauer Foundation and supporters like you. I'm your host, Blair Boone Magura. Thank you, member supporters. On today's Singing and Other Sins program, we present part one of a two-part birthday celebration of arguably the world's most famous collaborative pianist, Gerald Moore, born July 30th, 1899. He lived until March 13th, 1987. Throughout his illustrious career, Moore partnered with many eminent singers like Victoria de Los Angeles, Hans Hotter, Elizabeth Schwarzkopf, John McCormack, and Elizabeth Schumann. But he is probably best known for his timeless interpretations, partnering with German baritone Dietrich Fischer-Dieskau. He is the greatest accompanist of his day, and perhaps of all time, although it's interesting to note that Moore considered English composer and pianist Benjamin Britten to be the best accompanist of all time. At any rate, Moore's stature has never been eclipsed. Furthermore, he has set the bar high for the many great collaborative pianists who were to follow in his footsteps. His first book, The Unashamed Accompanist, published in 1943 and later recorded and pressed onto vinyl in 1955 under the name Testament, The Unashamed Accompanist, completely opened my mind and expanded my limited worldview of singing and piano accompaniment when I first read it at the young age of 17. So to celebrate Moore today, I would like to share excerpts of Testament, The Unashamed Accompanist, with Moore as both speaker and pianist, along with many of his celebrated recordings, especially selected for this program.
I want to begin by playing you the accompaniment of an Italian song, Il Bacio, The Kiss. And I play this because this is what many people regard as a typical accompaniment, and it goes like this. And so on and so forth, ad lib. But unfortunately, so many people, when they listen to a fine song by a fine composer, take it for granted that the accompaniment to that song means no more and contributes no more than that little tidlibbit I played just now. And the result is that they cut off their ears to the accompaniment altogether. Well, they miss an awful lot by doing that, because the composer of a great song uses the piano part to paint pictures. He uses the piano part to evoke a mood. And he sometimes makes his piano part reflect the very words that the singer is uttering. I want now to give you quite a lot of examples by Schubert, because Schubert was perhaps the first of the great songwriters really to make a duet between the voice and the piano. He promoted the accompaniment from a vague rumbling in the background, or a distant tinkling, to equal partnership with the voice. And you can say that all the great songwriters since Schubert's time have imitated Schubert in that one respect. They have made a duet between the voice and the piano. And an accompanist who sits down to play the accompaniment of any great song takes half the responsibility for the performance of it. Mind you, when I say the accompanist takes half the responsibility, I don't mean for a moment that the accompanist succeeds in marching off with half the fee. But we accompanists have minds above such mundane and sordid things as fees. All the same, it's a great regret to me that people, I'm convinced, do not listen properly when they listen to a song. They do not take in the piano part. But I have a much more personal reason for regretting this attitude towards the accompanist, and that is that I would like people to realize, what extremely important people we accompanists are. Of course, I know what happens. You go to a concert, and the most enchanting, elegant young lady walks on to sing. All the ladies look at her because they're interested in what she's wearing. And all the men look at her because, well, all the men look at her. Nobody looks at me, and I can't blame them. But, you know, sometimes the people I follow onto the platform are quite an eyeful. I mean, they occupy a lot of space. They float in, and they take their stand in the bend of the piano, and you find, on close examination sometimes, that the bend of the piano seems to be made to measure. Nobody notices the accompanist at all, and if they do happen to look at him, well, he looks so slender and so shy and so modest, the people think he's just there to do what he's told, to obey orders, to follow the singer through thick and thin. Well, there's a great deal more to it than that. In these days, there is a real partnership between the singer and accompanist, and I want to try and show you how the accompanist contributes to that partnership. I spoke just now of pictures in the piano part, and there's a well-known song of Schubert called Wohin, Whither, and this is the tune the singer sings. Now, you can't tell by listening to that tune that the singer is singing about a running stream, a little babbling brook. But when you hear the accompaniment that ripples and runs underneath that tune, you get the picture. Because here in the accompaniment is the picture. Here is the little babbling brook. And so on, it ripples and runs right through the song. By the way, the accompanist who makes a rallentando, that is to say, who slows up at the end of the song, is making a great mistake, because the little brook doesn't slow up at all. To play it like this is wrong. No, we should do what Schubert wants us to do. We should go right to the last chord without slackening the tempo, so that when I do come to that last chord, it comes so suddenly you can really, in your imagination, feel this fluttering rhythm going on underneath.
Lass singen, Gesell, lass rauschen. Rauschen und wandre fröhlich nach, fröhlich nach, fröhlich nach.
Another of Schubert's lovely songs is one called Auf dem Wasser zu singen, to be sung on the water. Here you're supposed to be in a rowboat, and in the piano part, you can really see the water lapping the side of the boat as it glides through the water. Just listen to this lovely effect that Schubert gets. These two pictures are very obvious, I know, and they could be called just watercolours of water music. But Schubert was by no means addicted to water. I want to play you now another picture from Schubert's songs, and this is a much more subtle one. This not only demands the attention of the listener to what the accompaniment is doing, it needs the listener's imagination as well, just as it needs the imagination of the player. and it's called Der Lindenbaum, the lime tree. In this song, the singer says in the first verse, how delightful it is in the cool of the summer evening to sit under the branches of the lime tree and listen to the leaves softly whispering in the summer breeze. Now, this is the tune the singer sings to us, and a lovely tune it is. Yes, it's a lovely tune, but you can't really say you can see a picture of a tree in that tune. No, the picture comes in the piano part. Now here's the introduction to this song, and I'm sure if you use your imagination, you'll be able to picture this tree, you'll be able to hear the leaves softly rustling together. There are the leaves rustling. And now the scene changes. It's winter time. And all the leaves have been swept from the branches, and you can hear the wind howling through the naked boughs of the tree. There's the wind howling. I do hope next time you hear that song, you'll take in what the accompaniment is saying. If you do, how much richer and how much more full of meaning the music will be. For the accompanist to find these pictures in his piano parts and to reveal them to his listener, it stands to reason that he must know the story, must understand every word the singer is singing.
Brunnen vor dem Tore
You're listening to Singing and Other Sins, and we're celebrating the legendary collaborative pianist Gerald Moore and enjoying excerpts from his testament, The Unashamed Accompanist. We just listened to Moore partner with Victoria de Los Angeles, Dietrich Fischer-Dieskau, and Hans Hotter. Let's return now to the wit, charm, and genius of Gerald Moore.
We accompanists have to play songs in almost every civilized language. French, German, Italian, Spanish, Finnish, English, and so on. And we must know what the words are about. If we don't, very grave disasters can occur. For instance, I was giving a lesson one day to a young lady who was trying to play the accompaniment of a song by Hugo Wolf. Now, Wolf, like Schubert, was an Austrian. All his songs were written to German words. And this particular song, with a very tricky accompaniment, is called Bitt ihn, O Mutter, which means Beg him, O Mother. It's a young girl in the song, and she's singing to her mother, and she says, O Mother, do beg Cupid not to molest me. O Mother, do beg the young God of love not to hurl his darts at me. Bitt ihn, O Mutter. Well, I saw this young lady clench her teeth in a most vicious snarl. She bunched her muscles together, and then she flung herself on the keyboard. Well, I'm very fond of my piano, so I stopped her very hurriedly, and I said, just a moment, you do know, of course, what bit e no mutter means, don't you? She said, yes, it means bite him, O mother. Well, you can see what a distressing affair that song would be. The singer would be pulling in one direction, and the accompanist would be pulling in another. And between them, of course, the song would be full to pieces. And this is why it is so terribly important for the accompanist to know what's going on. And this is quite a job sometimes, when you get all sorts of languages thrown at you. Some accompanists have perhaps a slight knowledge of French and German. I, though you'd scarcely believe it, I have a smattering of English. But if the accompanist doesn't know the language of the song, he must search in a dictionary or else get some friend to come in and translate the song for him. There are many magnificent American singers, and very good friends of mine they are too. Sometimes they engage me to play for them. Yes, they do, occasionally. Often they'll bring American songs, and I nearly always get a friend to come in and translate these songs into English. I was playing some years ago for a Russian singer who sang a program consisting entirely of Russian songs set to Russian words. Well, I can get along in Russian, of course, but not well enough to cope with such poets as Tolstoy and Pushkin. So I had to get the words explained to me, and I'm sure it made a great difference to my playing. But as I say, I can get along in Russian. I can say, Da, niet, pozhelstvo, spasibo, yo vos lublu, Gospody. And believe me, you can get anywhere on that. You can get to Siberia on that. It means yes and no, please and thank you, I love you, heaven help me. Well, all this is by way of preambling towards my next subject, which is how the accompanist tries to make his playing reflect the singer's words. Now, very often, we have to play a strophic song. A strophic song is a song of two, three, four, five or more verses where the singer sings the same tune and the accompanist plays the same notes in each verse. It's like a hymn tune. We sing the same tune all through the hymn. We have the same accompaniment, the same harmony. Only the words vary. Well, many a composer has written a strophic song like that. Schubert has written a song called Das Wandern, Wandering, and it has five verses. Now, what happens is this. The accompanist gets hold of the music, and it's all on one page, and he says to himself, ah, I have to play this page through five times. Good. I can go to sleep at the beginning, and I needn't wake up till the end. But the singer is not going to say that, for he's telling the story. He's going to vary the color and the quality of his tone. He's going to vary his volume and rhythm and his phrasing according to what he's singing, according to the words. In fact, you can say that the singer is going to use his imagination. Well, the accompanist must use his imagination too. And although he's playing the same notes all the time, he should do something with his touch and with his tone to help suggest what the singer is singing about. Now, this particular song, Wandering, has, I say it with all respect to Schubert, a rather a dull sort of accompaniment. It's all set down here in the bass of the piano in this register. And it never moves any higher than that. There's nothing up on the top of the piano to give it light and sparkle and brilliance like this. No, it's all down here. Well, as there are five verses to this song, I'm going to play it through to you five times. This is how the first verse goes. In that verse, the singer said, I want to wander, I want to roam, I want to see the world. And in the second verse, he espies a little millstream, and he says, I want to be like this little millstream. It's never still, it's never satisfied until it's reached the sea. Well, I, like that little stream, will not be satisfied until I have achieved something. So as the singer sings about this little millstream, we try to make our tone liquid and bubbly and pearly, like this little rivulet. In the third verse, the singer sings about the mill wheels turning and sending the water splashing on in their merry dance. And here, as we play, we think of the mill wheels turning. Why, says the singer, even the heavy millstones with their dull white faces seem to reflect the dancing spirit of the waters. And here, as we play, we think of the heavy millstones. And in the fifth and last verse, the singer once again goes back and rhapsodizes on the idea, the joy of roaming.
Ist des Willers Lust, das Wandern. Das Wandern ist des Willers Lust, das Wandern. Das muss ein schlechter Wille sein, dem niemals fiel das Wandern ein. Das Wandern, das Wandern, das Wandern, das Wandern.
vom Wasser haben wir's gelernt, vom Wasser. Vom Wasser haben wir's gelernt, vom Wasser. Das hat nicht Rast bei Tag und Nacht, die stets auf Wanderschaft bedacht. Das Wasser, das Wasser, das Wasser, das Wasser. Das sehen wir auch den Rädern ab, den Rädern. Das sehen wir auch den Rädern ab, den Rädern. Die gar nicht gerne stille stehen, die sich beim Tag nicht müde drehen. Die Räder, die Räder, die Räder, die Räder. Die Steine, selbst so schwer sie sind, die Steine. Die Steine, selbst so schwer sie sind, die Steine. Sie tanzen mit den Motorrein und wollen gar noch schneller sein. Die Steine, die Steine, die Steine, die Steine. O wandern, wandern, meine Lust, o wandern. O wandern, wandern, meine Lust, o wandern. Herr Meister und Frau Meisterin, lass mich in Frieden weiterziehen und wandern und wandern und wandern und wandern.
You're listening to Singing and Other Sins, and we're celebrating famed collaborative pianist Gerald Moore and enjoying excerpts from his testament, The Unashamed Accompanist. We just listened to Moore with baritone Dietrich Fischer-Dieskau in a performance of Das Wandern from Die Schöne Müllerin. We continue now with more excerpts from Testament, The Unashamed Accompanist.
Sometimes the composer of a strophic song slightly varies the vocal line, slightly varies the accompaniment to fit in with the characters of his story. And Brahms does this in one of his most charming songs. It's called Vergebliches Ständchen, The Vain Serenade. The scene of this song is a little tiny village of 20 or 30 thatched-roofed cottages miles from anywhere. It's bitterly cold, and when this song starts, it's dreadfully late at night. Everybody in the village has been in bed and asleep for a couple of hours at least. It's about 10:05, you know. When suddenly the silence of the night is rather rudely disturbed by a young farmer coming back from his work. I don't know where he's been since he stopped work, but he's on his way home at last. I think he's rolling slightly when he suddenly realizes he's passing the house of his sweetheart. And without a moment's hesitation, he lets out a yell, and he calls up to her window, "Good evening, darling. Wake up, get out of bed, come down and open your door to me. I want to kiss you good night." Well, I have no singer here with me, but I'm sure you'll find that the piano part does tell the story. It gives you the character of this chap. It's truly rural. And you can almost hear him saying, "Let me in, let me in." Well, of course, the girl very quickly springs out of bed. She's been in bed a couple of hours. I told you it's 10:05. She rushes to her window and she opens it. And she looks down on this fellow down there and she says, "How dare you come here at this time of the night? Be off with you. I shall most certainly not open my door to you tonight. And let me tell you, if I have any further trouble, I shall refer the matter to Mother." And now, although you can hear that the accompaniment remains substantially the same, Brahms does something to it. He takes away the masculinity and the roughness, and it now becomes feminine and dainty as the girl talks. Well, of course, the young fellow can see he's getting nowhere with his bullying and his blustering. So he changes his tactics. He starts to plead. Oh, he says, oh, please let me in for a moment, because I'm absolutely perished with cold down here, and the wind is coming down the street, and it's going right through me. And here in this verse, you can hear the wind howling, and you can almost feel this fellow shivering with the cold. Well, of course, what happens is that the young girl starts to laugh at him. After all, she can afford to laugh because she's upstairs in the warm and he's downstairs in the cold. And she says to him, look here, if your love isn't strong enough to stand a little cold, it's no use to me. So be off with you, and good night, my boy. But as she ticks him off, you can hear her in the piano part laughing, tittering with laughter all through this verse. Just listen to this tittering effect in the piano part. Well, that's the end of the song, so far as the singer is concerned, but it's not the end of the story. The accompaniment goes on and finishes the story for you, and you'll know exactly what's happening in the next moment, because you'll hear this young lady closing her window with a most decided bang. While the chap in the street, what is he doing? He says to himself, well, I'm damned.
You're listening to Singing and Other Sins, and we're celebrating Gerald Moore and enjoying excerpts from his testament, The Unashamed Accompanist. We just listened to Moore with Victoria de Los Angeles in a performance of Vergebliche Stenchen by Brahms. We'll return to Testament the Unashamed Accompanist next week in part two of our Gerald Moore birthday celebration program. Before we end today, I'd like to share a few classic recordings of Moore with other great singers. We'll first hear Moore with soprano Elisabeth Schumann in Schubert's Liebesbotschaft. We'll follow that recording with Moore with celebrated German mezzo-soprano Christa Ludwig and an excerpt from Schumann's Frauen lieben und leben, der herrlichste von allen. That musical gem will be followed by two of Richard Strauss's more technically difficult lieder for both pianist and singer, Ständchen and Heimliche Erforderung. Moore will be featured here with the great Swedish tenor Nikolai Geda.
Rauschendes Bächlein so silbern und hell, zur Geliebten so munter und schnell. Ach, trautes Fischlein, mein Bote, sei du, bringe die Grüße des Vogels herzu. All ihre Blumen im Garten gepflegt, die sie so lieblich am Busen trägt, und ihre Rosen im purpurnen Blut, Büchlein der Küke mit kühlender Flut, und ihre Rosen im purpurnen Blut, Büchlein der Küke mit kühlender Flut. Wenn sie am Ufer in Träume versinkt, gedenkend das Köpfchen hängt, tröste die Süße mit freundlichem Blick, denn der Geliebte kehrt bald zurück. Tröste die Süße mit freundlichem Blick, denn der Geliebte kehrt bald zurück. Durch die Sonne mit rötlichem Schein, wiege das Liebchen im Schlummer ein, rausche sie murmelnd in süßer Ruhe, flüstere ihr Träume.
mach auf, doch leise, mein Kind, um keinen vom Schlummer zu wecken. Kaum murmelt er wach, kaum zittert im Wind ein Blatt an den Büschen und Hecken. Drum leise, mein Mädchen, das nicht sich regt, nur leise die Hand auf die Klinke gelegt. Mit Tritten, wie Tritten der Elfen so sacht, um über die Blume so hüpfen. Flieg leicht hinaus in die Mondscheinnacht, zu mir in den Garten zu schlüpfen. Bring's Schlummer die Blüten am rieselnden Bach und duften im Schlaf, nur die Liebe ist wach. Sitz nieder, ihr dämmert geheimnisvoll unter den Lindenbäumen die Nachtigall uns so halten soll von unseren Küssen träumen.
See you.
I'd like to thank you for listening to today's program featuring the King of Collaborative Piano, Gerald Moore, and excerpts from his testament, The Unashamed Accompanist, along with remarkable performances with many celebrated singers. Today I'd like to leave you with Moore and Dietrich Fischer-Dieskau performing Schubert's Litany. Join me again next week for part two of our Gerald Moore program. I'm your host, Blair Boone-Magura. Aloha.
Stephen.